yourselves.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You're ready.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because of cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to a Monday. And since America focused on the sky today because of the eclipse, and I've seen an eclipse before, they are absolutely amazing. This one happened not to pass over my head. I actually made arrangements the last time around in 2017 to be under the track of the eclipse because I thought it'd be interesting to see at least one of them. But let me ask you this. Since we're focusing on the sky right now, should scientists from a major university, and I will name the university, be experimenting with the geoengineering of Earth's weather without telling the public about it? Now, let me get into the details of this. But first, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. And if you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our poll on X, what we used to call the Twitter poll. And this concerns a major announcement from the man that I expect to be in January of next year, the next president of the United States, and that is Donald Trump. Should America leave abortion decisions to the states or have one nationwide rule? Now, my position on this has been firm ever since the U.S. Supreme Court about a year ago, 2 years ago now, decided the Dobbs case. And in the Dobbs case, they said, number one, there is no constitutional right to abortion. Number one. And there never has been, and there never will be. But number two, the decision is now made by the individual states of America. And a lot of people have been hanging on the question of whether or not Donald Trump was going to take one position or another. There were a lot of pro-lifers, I happen to be pro-life, who believe that there should be a federal statute that limits abortion. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I'll get into the details of that a bit later on. But the fact is, if you went to the American Congress today and you said, we would like to have a statute that either bans abortion nationwide, that's not going to happen. Severely limits it nationwide. That's not going to happen. If there is a national statute, a federal law that defines abortion, you can almost better believe that it's going to end up being a law that allows abortion anytime, anywhere, under any circumstances. Do I believe that that would be a good way to go? No, I don't. So what happened today? Former President Donald Trump says he believes abortion should be left to the states. He released a video this morning with his position, and here's the key quote. My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wants it from a legal standpoint. He means it's not in the federal law. We don't have it under this crazy conspiracy theory that it existed somewhere in the Constitution. I've read the Constitution plenty of times. You can't find it anywhere in there. The states will determine by vote or legislation or maybe both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of that state. Now, what's happened since then? You've got states like New York and Washington and Oregon and California, and they've all said anytime you want an abortion, right up to the last nanosecond before that baby is born, you can have one. In fact, we'll make sure that taxpayers pay for it. Now, it's that outrageous. And then there are other states, decent states like Texas, that said when that baby's heartbeat can be heard at about 6 weeks, then you can't have an abortion after that. Do you know what's already happened by 6 weeks? About 50% of the abortions before the Supreme Court's ruling were happening by about 6 or 7 weeks, which means the majority of abortions, sadly enough, can still go forward. And then you had Mississippi, the actual Dobbs decision, only sought to limit it to 15 weeks. And then, of course, you got the people of Idaho. God bless them. They said, we don't want it at all. So with rare exceptions for rape, incest, and to save the life of the mother, no abortions whatsoever. Now, do you know what Ben Franklin called that? He referred it, when we only had 13 states, the original 13 colonies, he referred to it as laboratories of democracy. What he meant was that in a country where the federal government's role, at least theoretically, is limited, and everything else goes to be decided by the states or even be decided by individual American citizens who have individual God-given rights, that was the way he looked at it. And he said, when we have laboratories of democracy, one state can do it one way, another state can do it another way. And the people of the states that have abortion anytime, anywhere, always paid for by, and for any reason whatsoever, including the most common one, which is the mere convenience of the adults involved in that baby's life. Well, you can have one anytime you want. People in those states can then look to states like Idaho. Now, I know what liberals are going to say. They're going to say, well, yeah, that's crazy to put any limitations on it at all. In fact, there are Democrats that have notoriously said, Ralph Northam, the former governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, who said you should be able to have an abortion even a few days after the baby is born. I know that sounds crazy. That is the Democrats. And of course, you've got Joe Biden, who's always called himself pro-life. He has supported pro-life legislation, except that now sitting where he sits right now, he has to be all in on abortion. So should America leave those decisions to the states or have one nationwide rule? I would go with the position that Trump has taken today, because that's been my position all along. Leave it to the states. The states will make good decisions, and then you can fight it out at that level. Let me get back to this climate engineering, though. And this is what's kind of amazing. I would say that anytime you're trying to do science in secret, it probably is not going to end well. I'd remind you that science in secret was being paid for at a lab in Wuhan, China a few years ago, paid for in part by the Chinese Communist government, paid for in part by the United States government. It was the kind of crazy scientific research that had actually been banned in the United States by none other than Barry Obama. Barry Obama said, that stuff's so dangerous, I'm not going to allow you to do it anywhere in America. Now, he didn't say, well, go find a foreign lab, maybe in a communist country run by a dictatorship. But that's exactly what scientists like Fauci and others decided to do. Well, now what are they doing? Last Tuesday, just less than a week ago, a bunch of scientists from the University of Washington went to the deck of a decommissioned aircraft carrier that's sitting in San Francisco Bay. And they began to do experiments. They took salt crystals and they were using a cannon to blast them into the air. Their basic idea is they want to make more clouds in the sky and they want to make the clouds more reflective of sunlight, because they're concerned that the whole planet is going to roast because of global warming. Now, I think a lot of that is cockamamie, but even the folks in the scientific community are saying, you haven't begun to look at the ethical issues here, the moral issues here, or the science issues. If you change the climate, if you change the weather in one part of the planet, in one state, in one community, in one region, you have the potential to have really bad effects elsewhere. And they did not announce this publicly, but it's now been reported on by Political Pro and a number of other places. This is not stuff that's tinfoil hat stuff. University of Washington is conducting experiments on the atmosphere without announcing it to the public. I'd ask you whether or not you think that's a great idea. Back in a moment. It's a Monday, and you're listening to the Lawrence Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Lots of folks worry about their firearms, but Lars doesn't have to worry about Biden taking his guns. He stores them upstairs. This is the Lars Larson Show. Big iron on his
heel. That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know he got a right to say. sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
The big eclipse ain't up in the sky today, folks. The biggest eclipse in American politics happened on Saturday night. 9 days ago, Joe Biden claimed a history-making political fundraising record. He did it by bringing together so many celebrities from the loony left. That horny hick from Arkansas, unindicted rapist Bill Clinton, Barack Hussein Obama, Queen Latifah, Lizzo, and other freakish personalities from the world of entertainment. $25 million raised in a single day. Well, that record lasted for exactly 7 days. On Saturday night, Donald Trump eclipsed old slow Joe. He doubled up on Joe's campaign haul, bringing in $50.5 million. And the only celebrity was the best president of the 21st century. The president who didn't wreck the economy. The president who didn't get us into expensive new wars. The president who didn't declare a domestic war on fuel and energy. The president who didn't try to make you get the jab against your will through OSHA. The president who didn't try to use $500 billion of your tax money to pay off deadbeat student loans from college. The same Donald Trump who saw his own personal net worth go down by $1 billion while he was serving America, while the Biden crime family was making millions of dollars selling us out to communist China and Vladimir Putin's Russia. Why do you think Trump is leading the polls while Biden just screws up your life? If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, you're always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you happen to be a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list, but you got to bring your convictions with you. If you're not willing to actually put up a good argument and then stand up for it and answer a few questions, you're not going to make much of a naysayer. But in the meantime, 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in our poll on X, today's question about the announcement today by presidential candidate Donald Trump. Should America leave abortion decisions to the states or have one nationwide rule? And I told you, I think it's almost inevitable. If we have a nationwide federal law on abortion, it's going to say anytime, anywhere, and by the way, the taxpayers will pay the bill. So, should America leave the abortion decision to the states? I'd say yes. I would like to leave it with the states. Today's poll on X is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, back to the nonsense. Our question of the day, and this was after Kim Witchie, who I think is a young lady, but I can't be sure with a name like that. She wrote, how about letting the individual and their doctor and family decide on abortion? Keyword, individual, keep the government out of it. And I had to write back to Kim and I said, Kim, the minute an individual goes to a doctor, that doctor is licensed by the state government, that doctor is licensed for drugs with the federal government, that doctor can't be a doctor without the government being involved. The minute you go to your doctor, you're involving the government. And by that, you're involving all of the rest of us. So when you say it's an individual decision, and by the way, is there only one individual involved in creating a baby? Because the last time I checked, there are two. Mom has her body, but that body growing inside of hers is 50% DNA from her. And last time I checked, and I think I've done the math on this, 50% DNA from dear old dad. So does the dad get to be involved in a decision involving what is half his body and half her body? Kim, you might have left that part out, but good try being a naysayer. Now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I want to give today's Daily Grill to the Washington State Department of Labor and Industries, who've been doing, as usual with government, a terrible job. But I had no idea it was this bad. I'll actually give credit to the Daily Dead fish wrapper, the Seattle Times. They write that more than 1,800 Washington workers across all industries are waiting for their wages. That is, LNI, since 2018, has failed to collect $5.4 million from employees that the agency itself says owes the money to their workers. Now, what the Seattle Times did was they did an analysis of the agency's collection records. They even talk about one young lady who's still waiting months for her paychecks. This should be an easy thing to do, relatively easy. If you're running a business and you decide to let somebody go, you have to pay them off in full. Every time I've had a producer leave, I give that producer his or her paycheck on the last day they spend with us, whether it's a voluntary departure or an involuntary, and we try to keep those to a very low number. I think we're at 2 right now. But what they point out is that the state says we don't collect the money. And they say in most cases where LNI finds that the workers are owed money, business owners settle up and pay up before they go into collections. But once it goes into collections, the success rate has plummeted so sharply that in December, LNI reported to the legislature that last year, what did it collect in collections from for workers who are owed a paycheck? $0. Now, I mean, there are a lot of government agencies out there that do a bad job, but LNI actually goes to the legislature and says, by the way, that's our job, and we did zero of it. Now, our best email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Ed McCormick writes in, Lars, our government reported over 303,000 new jobs in March. They described the number as a very good employment number. What they forgot to tell you are some of the not so good numbers. In the last 6 months, taxpayers have hired 320,000 new government employees. The media calls them workers. This number includes new hires at the state and local level. Looking at history, that would include about 250,000 new union members. Their dues will support many Democrat candidates. There were no new factory jobs, and Ed is exactly right about that. Last month, out of 303,000 new jobs in the month of March, not a single manufacturing job, not one. 217,000 people now have two part-time jobs or more, and the number of full-time jobs actually fell. He says, you know, this is crazy. Does the government know who these people are, the people who are not working, and how do they successfully avoid having a job? Ed, I wish I knew the answer to that question. To your calls, let me see if I can squeeze this one in before the break. Kevin in Wilsonville, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening.
Hey, Lars, finally got through to you. I want to just comment about the abortion issue first.
Do it quick because we're going to hit the break, buddy.
That's a tough issue.
Why is it tough? It's either killing a baby or not. Is that a tough decision?
Yeah, that's a tough decision.
Why? Are you
for me.
Are you in favor of killing babies?
No.
You're not? Okay, then it's easy.
Okay, right. So here's where actually I was going.
Say it quick.
I have one child. And he graduated with a master's degree from Stanford.
Well, I'm glad you didn't abort him. Kevin, thanks for the call. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. The 40th President of the United States always knew where to put the blame.
You have blamed mistakes of the past, and you have blamed the Congress. Does any of the blame belong to you?
Yes, because for many years I was a Democrat.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Now, you hear me beat up on politicians all day long on this show. But one of the things I stick to as a journalist, because I'm still a journalist, I'm an opinion journalist, but I will not break from, I'm going to tell you things that are true. And if I beat up on a politician with things that are false, then that's not a good idea. So last week, if you heard this part of the show, you heard Senator David Brock Smith, who was in the state rep for a long time, and then he became a state senator recently. And he says that people have been telling things about him that are provably untrue, and went into detail. So I'll do my due diligence. I want to talk to Rob Taylor, who's an activist, a podcaster, a fellow talk show host, winner of the 2024 Don McIntyre Award for Excellence in Grassroots Political Activism, and he joins me now. Rob, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Lars.
Now, you and Ben Edel have been very critical of Senator David Brock Smith, and I want to get into some of the specific things that you've alleged about him. Do you mind if we do that?
Oh, that'd be perfectly fine.
I consider the two biggest allegations that, one, he is a tool of the Chinese communists, and for that, he's seeking to put windmills off Coos Bay in league with the Chinese communists, and that there have been billboards put up to that effect. The second is about foreign ownership of land, which I consider a big problem as well, and that he was involved directly in facilitating a Chinese communist national to become the biggest forest owner in the Pacific Northwest. Are those the two biggest ones, or are there any other major criticisms that you brought about Senator David Brock Smith?
Well, those are two. I've had many criticisms against David Brock Smith, but those are the two that you challenged, and I would like to address that, and I would like to address the cease and desist letter that I received.
Yeah, because David Brock Smith has had his lawyers send a letter saying, either knock this off or you're going to get a lawsuit. So that's the cease and desist letter. I don't want to spend a lot of time reading the letter. Is there some key part of it that you want people to understand? He's basically said, well, you're saying untrue things about me. If you don't stop, I'm going to bring a lawsuit. Has he been unfair in faulting you for things you've said about him?
Well, I do believe that for me, myself, what do you, you know, Ben can speak for himself, but I'm not a member of RUCPAC. I'm not on the board. I've never even donated to RUCPAC, even though I have a lot of communication with Ben, and he's sending me a cease and desist order, threatening to sue me just for sharing memes and articles that I've gotten off of RUCPAC. And that's what I believe is part of the problem with David Brock Smith. Instead of challenging people on the issues, he tries to just shut up his critics. And that's what he's trying to do with me. For Ben, it's a different story. But he's actually literally trying to sue me for sharing memes and articles.
Okay. And that I would have the same issue, that if I want to share something, but if I share something, am I endorsing it to some extent?
In a part, you could say that. Maybe, okay.
Because that's the way you're looking at it that way. Rob,
sure.
There are times I don't share memes because I think I don't want to be associated with that kind of language, that kind of thing. And there are plenty of things that I look at and I think that's interesting, but I'm not sharing that because because if I share it, people will think, well, Lars agrees with this or Lars endorses this way of saying it. And there's plenty of that I don't want any connection to. So let me ask about the two. Do you believe that David Brock Smith facilitated this massive purchase of a couple of hundred thousand acres of Northwest timberland by a Chinese communist national?
That is factually incorrect. But what is correct is the spirit of what Ben was saying in that article, that by passing a bill, helping pass and voting for SB 762, David has made it more possible for rich communists from China to be able to buy property in Oregon instead of average citizens in America or in Oregon to be able to buy those properties, because that was the fire mapping bill that has driven up insurance costs all over rural Oregon. Even Dennis Lithicum and eight of the senators in the Senate voted against that bill because, as Dennis Lithicum said, it lived up to the Klaus Schwab expression, you will own nothing and you will be happy. And David voted for that. So the spirit of what Ben said is true. Factually, it's completely incorrect.
Yeah, because the land was actually acquired years before David Brock Smith was in the legislature. Was it not?
Yes, in 2015 is when it was purchased. However, I believe Ben is looking into current purchases by those same by that same organization that Chen is involved in.
And by the way, I don't think the state should have been involved in wildfire mapping at all, but I also don't think it drove up fire insurance rates, because when I reached out to the insurance companies, they said, you know, we're aware of the state's maps, but we don't use them to set the rates. We have our own resources that we use to set the rates.
And maybe that's true. I haven't really looked into as far as that, but I do know that it's putting new regulations on rural Oregonians, which makes it more and more difficult for us to own land.
And I don't like that either, but Rob, you say this ties into foreign nationals buying land. The changes in insurance rates apply to anybody who owns the land, whether they're an American or a Chinese national, or maybe they're from Kenya. So
and that's
how is that specific to the Chinese?
Citizen. Well, I'm talking about very wealthy Chinese. Tianqiu Chen is a wealthy billionaire who has a lot of money, and he doesn't have to worry about the regulations and insurance prices because he can afford it. Whereas Oregonians do have to worry about those regulations and insurance prices, and it's going to cost us more money. It's going to cost us more burdens, and that puts up barriers to average citizens to be able to own.
Fair enough, but you've admitted the one charge against him, that he facilitated foreign nationals buying land in Oregon, is false, right?
Yes.
Okay, second issue, and that is windmills. To hear Senator David Brock Smith tell it, he says, look, until they introduced the bill at the legislature, the windmill sign-off was going to be between the governor's office and BOEM, which is the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, a federal agency. And the bill said the public has to be involved in making this decision. How does that in particular make Senator David Brock Smith a tool of the CHICOM government?
Well, that doesn't specifically make him. There's several reasons I believe that. And the reason I believe that the windmill bill, that's part of the interview that I had with him that ended up canceling my show, because I was calling him a liar on it, because at the time in 2021, and I sent you the videos on this,
I saw
he was in full support of the windmill project. Going back to 2010, when he was running for commissioner, he supported those windmills. And in HB 3375 turns the part of that bill helps the agencies get involved, the six agencies that, by the way, are in full support of this project. It allows them to smooth out the permitting process, because they're the ones who are going to have to deliver those permits for that project.
That's assuming that it doesn't get knocked down. But because when it was just BOEM and the governor's office, the governor directs the state agencies. The governor, of course, Kotek, is completely in favor of this stuff. And Brock Smith says he's against it and has been for several years. Is it a fair criticism of him to say, you're the guy who's letting the CHICOMs put the windmills in Coos Bay?
Well, we're not even sure that the Chinese are going to be putting the windmills in here, but since they're the main developers, it's a good educated guess that they were the ones who will be developing. But then you look at the rest of David Brock Smith's voting record. He's voted for socialized medicine. He's voted for the homeless industrial
complex. All I'm talking about is the things that he said the cease and desist on, which is what you wanted to talk about. And I'm glad to talk about it, but it sounds like you've admitted both of those charges are false. I'll look forward to talking to Ben Edel, who is the guy who got the cease and desist letters. Rob, thanks very much for coming on. Back in a moment. It's Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you've got the Lars Larson Show.
Nixon was wrong about a lot of things, but he's right about this.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
What say you, Joe Biden? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. Let's go first to Ron in Salem. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, we're going to talk about DBS, Mr. David Brock Smith, as I call him, China Brock Smith, unfortunately. I looked at that video from 2020 when they kept the people out of the building on House Bill 3335 when he was a representative. From an individual standpoint and looking at the precursors of the situation, he was joyfully celebrating, yes, this could be a great thing, blah, 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 blah. On that situation with Speaker Kotek at the time period, our current governor now. And to me, you can't serve two masters. And then,
But hold on, Ron. You like to filibuster, so do I. Let's get to the specifics. What is it that he's done that specifically helped the Chinese Communist government in this state on either windmills or land?
I will say this. I don't know about the Chinese thing, but I will say
You started with the CHICOM thing, Ron. You said, or,
yes,
you know,
I believe
your moniker
I believe
for him.
I believe
and I'm just curious.
I'll tell you what I believe.
Yeah.
I believe with his association with Mr. Tuttle, everybody's got the right to have freedom of speech, through money, whatever, based on this Supreme Court decision. But I see some nefariousness in my belief. I feel like that...
That's so ill-defined, Ron. Usually you're very specific. But look, I worry about nefarious characters, too. But when people come after a politician, and I got no particular dog in the fight on David Brock Smith or his opponent, but when his opponents start crafting lies and they say he passed a bill to make it easier for the Chinese communists to put windmills, and they put up billboards saying that, and then you ask the people pushing that point of view just recently, Rob Taylor, and they go, well, no, that's not true. And I said, what about the land purchase? Well, no, that one's not true either. Ron, I don't like it when people lie. Even when they're conservatives or Republicans like I am, I don't want them lying about people. I don't take it lightly. Let's go to John. Hey, John, how are things in Custer?
Oh, they're going as good as they can be in our current state of affairs.
No kidding.
Hey, Lars, on Friday, a gentleman called. Small businessmen had problems with OSHA.
About $30,000 fine, yep.
Was that at the state or the federal level he was dealing with?
No, state OSHA.
Okay. Well, I do have a little experience in that, too.
Well, let's get to it, because daylight's wasting. So.
On a facility, they give you a chance to rectify everything before they start hammering you. I also noticed that my wife worked at...
I don't know if that's necessary. Hold on, John, is that always true? Because I have a friend who's a home builder. He happens to build floating homes. And a number of years ago, he said, yeah, we got tagged for $5,000 a day. I said, why? He said one of my workers had finished up for the day. He was on his way to his pickup truck because they have to build these things on water. He had taken off his life jacket, which he was required to wear, throw it in the truck, and then he realized he left his toolbox down at the floating house. So he walked down, walked onto the platform, got his toolbox, and walked off. $5,000 fine. I'm not aware they ever offered anybody, by the way, if you always wear your life jacket, we'll let it go. So do they always give it a fix-it ticket?
Well, that might be the disparity between OSHA dealing with a government agency as opposed to OSHA dealing with the private, businessmen.
No, these were both private businessmen. The home builder was a private businessman. The man who called me Friday was a private businessman. Are you telling me that OSHA always offers a fix-it, and avoid the ticket, or do they sometimes just slap the fine on you?
Well, at the federal level, for 13 years I was in charge of facilities, and they would come in and tell me what was wrong and then give me the opportunity to fix it. Of course, I don't know that the government ever pays fines, to its own agencies, so maybe that's
they
the
do.
Disparity.
They do, John, but you know why they don't matter? When a private home builder gets hit with a fine, it comes right off his bottom line. When the government agency gets a fine, you know who pays it? The taxpayers. So all they're doing is one government agency that's supposedly working on our behalf pays a fine to. So this is why when in Seattle they had a massive failure at a sewage treatment plant and dumped sewage in Puget Sound, and it was a gigantic mess, and it was all foreseeable, it was all preventable, and they get fined by some other government agency, either EPA or they get fined by state Department of Ecology. And all it is one government agency taking our money and paying it. I'll tell you what, John, if you'll promise, I haven't had a speeding ticket in 22 years, but if I get speeding tickets, if you promise me you will pay all of my speeding tickets, I might not get more tickets, but they'd hurt a whole lot less if I got a ticket and every time I got one, somebody else paid the cost. I don't see the point of government agencies fining each other. Unless you say this fine would be $5,000, but instead we're hitting the head of that agency with a $500 personal fine that may not be paid by taxpayer money. How quick do you suppose we'd get their attention then?
You've got an idea there, Lars.
Well, and it'd be a lot cheaper because all these guys just shuffling our money back and forth, that doesn't do a damn bit of good. I mean, because all they're saying is, oh, yeah, we got a $50,000 fine. Of course, we're not paying it. It's being paid by the taxpayers, and it's being paid to another government agency that's taking the money on behalf of the taxpayers. I mean, that kind of stuff, that's nonsense. But As for getting a $30,000 fine for a bunch of minor incursions, I wish they'd make them all fix-it tickets. And then, if you don't fix it, you have to pay the fine. It's a Monday. It's an eclipse day. It's a Powerball day. And you've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You're ready.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's my pleasure to be with you. But I want you to consider this. Why has the state of Oregon effectively immunized, I'm not talking about the jab, I'm talking about immunized, meaning made them not subject to the rules? Why have they immunized killers and violent criminals under the age of 18? Thought we'd talk about that with our friend, D.A. Josh Markey, or former D.A. Josh Markey, who joins me now. Josh, why did it happen?
It happened because late at night in the spring of 2019, the Democratic majority decided to repeal what voters had twice passed. It was originally called Measure 11 in 1994 and was reaffirmed by 75% of the voters in 2000. And that law, which again, voters twice voted on, said that older teenagers, 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, who are convicted of the most violent forms of rape and homicide, not even all homicides, not even all rapes, would stand trial and as adults and would serve time first in a juvenile facility and after they turn 25 as adults. Because of what happened late in the night, in the evening, with the connivance of some Republicans, but mostly Democrats, excluding Betsy Johnson and Brad Witt, that was completely repealed. And voters may wonder, and listeners may wonder, well, whatever happened? Why don't we hear about these cases anymore? Because they're essentially secret. We don't know what's happening with them. Reporters can't find out about them. And if you try to get a docket, you won't find anything.
In other words, there is a record, but not one where the public would easily get it, of what happens to juvenile killers and rapists.
Not just easily. I mean, this has happened with friends of mine who are journalists. Let's say you find out that a 17-year-old has been arrested for, say, one of the all too many shootings in Portland. And let's say you're lucky enough to find out that the person's being arraigned. We still have public courts in America. Even for juveniles, they're public. If you went to the Multnomah County Courthouse and said, I want to know when Johnny Jones is being arraigned, they won't tell you. And the docket doesn't show it. And what you're really talking about are secret. You know, the whole reason we have public trials, why we have those benches in courtrooms, is because the public's business is done in public. And to make sure that people like the elected DA do their job. It's hard to measure. Well, we do know that crime is out of control in Oregon, and it's out of control with what Schmidt's doing, because we can see it, and there's a direct correlation, but hard to measure it.
Yeah, and in fact, he doesn't seem, even though he's running for re-election, he's running against Nathan Vasquez, who I have to mention is not willing to. I don't know why he won't. He ghosts us. We've tried to ask him to come on and talk about the specific things that he finds fault with in Mike Schmidt, so we can understand, is there a difference between Vasquez and Schmidt? He won't do it, which makes me immediately suspicious of somebody who's seeking public office who won't show up in public and answer questions. I'd put him in the Joe Biden category. I'd like to have the job. I don't want to answer any questions about it. Always makes me suspicious. Should I be?
No, I don't think you should be. I mean, I don't know Nathan well. I've contributed what I consider probably more money than I have, and I'm obviously speaking out on his behalf. He's not a politician, and he has very, very little experience with the media. He's running, you know, one of the ironies about district attorneys offices are. You really don't want a politician in the job, but of course it is a political job, and you do have to run for office. There's a reason for that. I wouldn't normally take up this much time, you know, talking consistently about one person as I do Mike Schmidt. And it doesn't affect me personally in the sense I don't live in Portland, but one needs only Portland to see how bad it is. And there are very few other jobs where one person can make so much of a negative difference, because the district attorney decides ultimately whether cases will be filed. And ultimately, as we can see in Portland, the Portland Police Bureau just stops trying, because there's no point in trying to pursue a case when you know that the DA's office, and Schmidt has stepped in and yanked cases away from career people. And as we learned from the Oregonian, credit to Noel Crombie, who they did a story, I think last week, about using the public records about when actually people come into the office. Schmidt is coming in apparently about 60% of the time, yep, compared to about 90% for the DAs in the around.
Which means
counties.
He's out of the office 40% of the time, again, just like Joe Biden. I want to ask you about something else. So the last couple of weeks, I've talked about this 9-year-old girl who was raped at Scott Elementary. And I've had people say, well, how can you say for sure it happened? I can just say that the reporting indicates it happened. The father of one of her assailants, if convicted, it would be rape, but it's a child. And we don't know the names of the people, we don't know how old they are. They may be the same age as her or older. But if you were when you were DA, because you were DA just a few years ago in Clatsop County, if yeah, you came to know that a crime had been committed against a 9-year-old girl and you were the DA, could you pursue a case?
Absolutely. The only time when effectively the criminal system can't be used is if the suspects are under the age of 10. There is a presumption in our legal system, although it can be overcome, that a 9-year-old is not capable of forming the criminal intent. Now, that doesn't mean, even under the previous laws, before they mangled Measure 11, juveniles over the age of 14 could be brought into adult court. But even if they weren't brought into adult court, even if, say, they were 13 or 14, there would be a juvenile case. And one of the things that's commonly misunderstood is people say, oh, it's secret. No, it's not. The media has simply decided, and for some reasonable reason,
they don't want to report on it. Yep.
They don't want to basically
But let me ask you, in the last minute I've got, Josh, with you, tell me this. I'm not suggesting that if her assailants were 9 that they should go to prison or even juvie. But if a case were brought, that at the very least those 2 9-year-old boys, if they were 9, would be in front of a judge and the judge could set conditions, could they not? Find you're not a delinquent, you're not guilty, but you're a dependent of the court, and the court could say, absolutely, I'm going to require the parents to put you through some counseling or some behavior modification, and I'm going to put some limits on what you're allowed to do, you know, so that you're not going to end up in this situation again and you're not going to hurt somebody. A judge could do that, correct?
Absolutely. That's the purpose of the juvenile system.
And Mike Schmidt, even though the schools violated the law, he could bring charges against people at Portland Public Schools for failing to report this crime, couldn't he?
Absolutely, yeah.
And he's choosing...
It's a crime.
It's a crime.
It's an infraction, but yes.
But yeah, he could go after them for failing to follow the mandatory reporting law. Josh, thanks very much. That's former DA Josh Marquis. In a moment, I want to get into some of the details of Donald Trump announcing his position on abortion. And he says it's up to the state and what his critics have had to say. We'll get into that next. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Control Explained.
Want to stop drunk drivers from killing sober drivers? Ban sober drivers. That's how gun control works.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have
more conservative than others, and that's what they will be.
That is Donald Trump announcing today, actually kind of rolled it out last night on his Truth Social social media platform, but announcing his position on abortion. Now, I would argue that Donald Trump has been, as president for 4 years, the single most pro-life president in modern American history. I'd take that all the way back to Reagan. He's perhaps even better on the issue than Ronald Reagan was. And yet he gets all kinds of grief about this. And the Biden administration would like to make this abortion, this election this year, all about abortion. I don't think they're going to be able to make it happen. And I'll tell you why. Because Donald Trump's position is consistent with federal law. It's consistent with state law and states' rights. It's consistent with the Constitution. And why is that? Because in the Dobbs case, the U.S. Supreme Court decided there never was a federal right to abortion. There was never a right found anywhere in the U.S. Constitution, and they threw out Roe versus Wade, which had made up a fiction that there is a right to abortion contained somewhere in the Constitution. I guess if you use lemon juice or secret decoder rings, you can find it in there somewhere. I have never been able to find it myself. But if you talk to liberals, they'll say, well, I'm concerned about my abortion rights. Really? Well, where do you get those abortion rights? Well, same place all our other rights come from. You mean from God? God gave you a right to abortion? Boy, that's a new one on me. But Trump finally comes out and says, look, this will be decided by the states. And if you couldn't hear that soundbite, Joel, can we replay Trump on the state's abortion rights? Because I want people to really hear what he had to say. And then I want you to contrast it. Feel free to contrast it with what Joe Biden has to say. And then I'll remind you of a little bit of Joe Biden's history. Take a listen to what he actually said a moment ago.
Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be.
Yeah, and some will be a whole lot more liberal. For example, Oregon and Washington and Illinois and New York City, New York State, and the state of California, all very, very liberal. And by liberal, I mean you can go right up to the moment before that baby's head starts to crown out of mom, and you say, well, we can still kill the baby at that point. That's what the Democrats want. In fact, there are some Democrats, like the former governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, who is a medical doctor himself, who believes that you should be able to abort the baby even after the baby is alive and breathing and out of mom. So, given that, Trump has taken a sensible position. Is his position that it's up to the states consistent with the Constitution? It is. Is it consistent with the Supreme Court? It is. And is it going to be different in different places? Yes. In California, Oregon, Washington, Illinois, and New York State, anytime, anywhere, for any reason. And then you've got states like Texas that has a heartbeat bill. Says the minute you can hear that baby's heartbeat, you cannot abort that baby. Now, I've seen reporters call that a functional ban or a virtual ban on abortion. That is one big fat lie. And let me tell you why. My source is the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC. Not an agency I always trust, but the number they give is that roughly half of all abortions had already happened at 6 weeks. And that was before the Dobbs decision, you know, when there was no urgency to get it done by a certain point. But still in all, most abortions have already happened by the time the baby has been in mom for 6 weeks. And the number that happened after that is the other half. Well, with the new limitations in Mississippi, a 15-week limitation, which by European standards is very, very broad. Now, I want to remind you of something. Joe Biden is going to try and position himself as the pro-abortion president. But I'm going to do something. There's a great little mashup I got that I didn't put it together, but it's a brilliant mashup of Joe Biden sound bites over the decades that describe his position on abortion. He has been anti-abortion for a long, long time. And if you're surprised to hear that, I'll tell you what, listen to his words. The man has been pro-life for a long, long time. Not entirely, but largely. And you use your own judgment. Take a listen to what he has said over several decades before he became vice president to Obama, before he became president of the United States. He was largely a pro-life senator. Take a listen.
I'm prepared to accept that the moment of conception is human life and being.
In 1974, he said, I don't like the Supreme Court decision on abortion. I think it went too far.
I think it's always a tragedy. And I think that it should be rare and safe. And I think we should be focusing on how to limit the number of abortions.
On no fewer than 50 occasions, he'd voted against federal funding for abortions. The quote inside the April 7th, 1994 letter reads, those of us who are opposed to abortions should not be compelled to pay for them.
Don't support public finance, public funding, I don't, because that flips the burden. That's then telling me I have to accept a different view.
This is a guy who on the Judiciary Committee in 1982 voted for an amendment from Orrin Hatch that would allow states to ban abortion.
Abortion is always wrong.
And this is from 1986, where he tells the Catholic Diocese newspaper that abortion is, quote, wrong from the moment of conception, and he praised pro-life groups for trying to push back the frontier on when abortion is legal.
I'm prepared as a matter of faith to accept that life begins at the moment of conception.
Now, that's Joe Biden. That's his history. Now, does he own his history? I would say he has to own his history. So what does he own today? He's the head of a party. He wants to be president again. He's seeking re-election. He doesn't yet have the nomination, but that seems to be in the bag as long as the party doesn't decide to kick him to the curb. So he almost has to take a pro-abortion position. So how does he make himself different than Trump? When Trump says every state can make its own decision, Texas can have some limits, Mississippi, broader limits, California, New York State, the broadest limits. And then, of course, you got states like Idaho that have effectively said, except in emergencies or to save the life of the mother or cases of rape and incest, no abortion whatsoever. Leave it up to the states. And imagine Joe Biden trying to explain to people why it makes more sense to have one big national rule in a country that is largely a center-right country. It's not going to work. Take a listen to Trump again on the abortion battle.
This 50-year battle over Roe v. Wade took it out of the federal hands and brought it into the hearts, minds, and vote of the people in each state was really something. Now it's up to the states to do the right thing. Like Ronald Reagan, I am strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother.
Now, I got to tell you something. He's getting a share of heat. Donald Trump, that is. You've got the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America group, one of the biggest pro-life groups in America. They have advocated a federal 15-week abortion ban, and they said that Trump's announcement is a concession to the abortion rights movement. Let me tell you, in practical terms, could you get a ban on abortion throughout America at the federal level? I don't think it's likely to ever get past the Congress. I certainly don't think it would get Joe Biden's signature. I would imagine if the Congress would pass it, Donald Trump would sign it. But the Supreme Court has said under the Constitution, this is the decision of the people in the 50 states. And Donald Trump says, let it be an issue of the will of the people. Now, would you rather have Joe Biden out there lying about his history on abortion when he was pro-life? Or would you rather have Donald Trump, who honors states' rights and the will of the people? You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I want to tell you, I think if there's one thing I do admire about President Joe Biden, and that is his ability to gaslight the American people. Now, that's a reference back to either a movie or a stage play where a guy decided to fool his wife by saying, no, no, the lights are fine, honey, while turning them down, even though he knew that what he was saying was untrue. She didn't. And in this case, you've got Joe Biden running around telling everybody, oh, you're complaining about crime? Crime isn't up. Crime is down. Don't believe your lying eyes. I mean, crime is actually falling in America. You just have the impression because of, oh, Donald Trump, all those nasty MAGA Republicans. They're trying to make you believe that crime is up when, in fact, it's down. Well, it's not down. It's up dramatically. And the guy who knows that best is a great friend of the show, Dr. John Lott, who's president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. I serve on the board of directors, but that's not why I have him on. He's the author of a whole bunch of great books, including More Guns, Less Crime. Dr. Lott, welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me on.
Would you mind telling my audience just how severely Joe Biden is gaslighting them when he says, no, crime is falling in America. It's actually down. There are fewer violent crimes, fewer murders, fewer of all those things.
All right. Well, there are two measures that we have of crime. There's crimes reported to police. That's from the FBI Uniform Crime Reports. And then there's another measure called the National Crime Victimization Survey that tries to get at total crime, crimes that are reported to police and crimes that aren't reported to police. And people are focusing on reported crimes to police, but they are well less than half. The vast majority of crimes are not reported to police. And what's happened over the last few years is that people haven't been reporting crimes as frequently to police as they used to. And there's a simple reason for that, and that is law enforcement has collapsed. If you look at all cities in the United States in the 5 years prior to COVID, about 44% of violent crimes that were reported to police resulted in arrest. And by 2022, it had fallen to 35%. And if you look at cities over a million in population where most of the violent crimes are occurring, it went from 44% down to 20%. That's over a 50% drop in arrests for reported crimes. But what's happened is that it's true that reported crimes have fallen, but the reason why they've fallen is because people can't see the point in going reporting these crimes. But at the same time, you've seen a drop in reported crimes, non-reported crimes have soared. If you look between 2019 and 2022, non-reported crimes have gone up by over 17%. So total crimes has actually gone up significantly over this period of time, even though reported crimes to police has gone down.
Well, and it makes sense they go down because you and I talked about this yesterday, that if you took all these police departments and the mob in the streets said defund the police, so you cut the total number of police officers, you have fewer people patrolling, you have longer response times, people now know that unless somebody's bleeding and dying right now, if you call 911, there are people who may wait 10 or 20 minutes waiting for 911 to even answer. And if they do answer, or when they do answer, they may say, I'm sorry, we're probably not going to be able to send an officer by, and you just give up and say, well, if they're not going to come by and investigate the crime, if they're not going to refer it for prosecution, and if the local DA is a George Soros special and he says, I'm not going to prosecute that crime anyway because of racial justice or some other nonsense like that, if you say, well, if they're not going to arrest anybody, they're not going to prosecute anybody, then why am I bothering to call the police and report this anyway? Because it isn't going to change anything. Do you think the logic holds on that?
I think you're exactly right. I mean, we've not only cut budgets. I mean, some budgets have been refunded, but you lost a lot of very senior officers who had a lot of knowledge and experience there. But you've also demoralized the police in many ways. The police themselves, you know, why should they go and arrest somebody if the prosecutors aren't going to go and prosecute them? So this is just the federal government only collects data on arrests. But from everything that we've seen, the rate of prosecutions have gone down. But just give you an idea, you know, to try to encapsulate this. If you take something like all violent crimes that result in arrests, only 8% of violent crimes result in arrests for cities over a million in population. Only 1% of all the property crimes eventually result in arrest. And if you have only a fraction of those that are even going to be charged, I mean, because just because somebody's arrested doesn't mean that they're going to be charged. And you're giving examples where people aren't actually being charged with these things. You know, you're talking about, for property crimes, well less than 1% of property crimes result in somebody even being charged. So what's the cost of engaging in property crimes? So it's essentially free to go and engage in some type of theft.
It means that not only are the police cut down, but it means the criminals got the message that if I go out and commit this crime, my chances of being arrested are 1 in 100. And my chance of being prosecuted are something less than 1 in 100, because only a certain percentage of those will be prosecuted. And in many cases, you'll end up in front of a judge. You may or may not have a defense attorney, because that is running short as well. And the judge may be of a mind to say, oh, well, given the circumstances, I'm not going to find you guilty, or I'm going to give you a relatively light punishment. If you've reduced the cost to the criminal of crime, not the cost to the victim, but the cost to the criminal, the criminal might say, well, then I'm going to engage in more crime.
Right. Look, there's no way you can look at this and not see that law enforcement across the country, particularly in the largest cities in the country, has collapsed. And looking at reported crimes, which is what the media wants to do, the media, time after time, I've come across literally dozens of news stories that say violent crime is falling. But for some bizarre reason, people seem to think that it's increasing. I'll just give you, if you look at the National Crime Victimization Survey between 2021 and 2022, the last 2 years that we have it available, it hasn't come out for 2023 yet, violent crime increased by 42%. Total violent crime.
In one year.
I look at this, and it seems very clear to me that people themselves know what's happening with regard to violent crime. It's the media that doesn't understand how these numbers are put together and what they mean that's gaslighting people. Either they have no clue about how these numbers are put together. I was senior advisor for research and statistics in the Department of Justice, and I've served as chief economist for the Sentencing Commission. So I have a pretty good idea how these numbers, where to look them up and how to put them together and things like that. But the media is just really providing a very false narrative here. It wants to say that people have no idea what they're talking about. It's really the media that has no clue.
No, because you've got people, and especially when it comes, I saw administration officials like Pete Buttigieg over the weekend saying, oh, no, it's now safe to walk around Washington, D.C., says a guy who's a cabinet officer that has a permanent security detail. Well, if I had armed men and women walking around me all the time, I wouldn't worry about crime either, because you're very well protected. But using Pete Buttigieg and his ability to walk his dog as a measure of how crime is going, bad idea. That's John Lott. You can find all the statistics that he writes about at the Crime Prevention Research Center. It's available online. And, of course, his books like More Guns, Less Crime. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
It's no longer a question. He may talk about serious issues, but even Lars has a sense of humor.
I have a joke for you. The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's the Radio Northwest Network. On a Monday, I'm going to go to a naysayer here in just a moment. But I got to tell you about this. I've always called them killer whales. And I know the politically correct folk call them orcas. They say that killer whale thing, that's unfair. Well, I'll tell you what. Go to my website at LarsLarson.com and check out the video of a killer whale that goes out and just does a number on, guess what, a great white shark. Yeah, a full Jaws-sized shark. And this killer whale just does a number on this shark. If that shark lived through it, I'd be amazed. But we posted the video because I thought it was great. Why don't we drop all the woke orca nonsense and just call them what they are? I don't think it's an insult to say about an animal that it's a killer whale when it can actually do in one of the biggest apex predators literally on the planet. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. And our X poll today You can find the question at Lars Larson Show. Should America leave abortion decisions to the states? That's Donald Trump's position. Or should we have one nationwide rule that says abortions anytime, anywhere, and for any reason? That would be the Joe Biden position. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. We love naysayers on this program, so let me go to Gary. Gary, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What do you and I disagree about today?
Okay, Lars, I know you like to be flattered to have everybody say how much.
No, I don't. I don't care. So, no.
Okay.
Well, but I really don't. It's nice if you like the show.
Now you asked me for a comment.
What do we disagree about, Gary?
Listen, do I have to use? I'm 79 years old. I need some respect from you. So respect your elders. And
you earn respect.
Okay. You have a very misguided
opinion. Joe is old, too, and I don't respect him at all.
Pardon me?
Joe Biden is old, too, and I don't respect him at all.
Are you listening to me?
Yes.
Now, I was told not to use any profanity in this broadcast, and you're going to start prompting things that I don't want to say. Now, let me get to the point. You have a misguided impression of unions.
I do.
And
why?
My dad was a union member and a Teamster in 1944. I joined the Teamsters in 1964. I've been in and out. I've had withdrawals, but I never gave up my Teamster membership. Teamsters have a tough way of negotiating with certain people. Ford Motor Company had goons that would break up any union negotiations back in the early days.
Gary, they engage in extortion.
And have you ever had a union? Have you ever been in an elevator? Let me.
Yes.
There's a yes or no question.
Yes.
Have you ever been in an elevator?
I said yes. Yes.
Okay. The elevator constructor unions has a very extensive training program for anybody that's in that profession. And
so what?
If you want to be in an elevator built by a non-union company, you're in trouble.
That's a false notion too. Hold on. We're going to engage in a conversation, or we won't do it at all. There are electricians in the Northwest who are part of a union training program. There are also state training. There are also other programs that cost the same amount of money, take the same amount of time, and turn out journeyman electricians, and they make the same amount of money, and they are just as well trained. So the idea that the union member is only the only well-trained worker you can find to do anything is hogwash.
No, but they're still highly qualified.
No? Well, then tell me this. Gary, tell me this. What is the meaningful difference between a union-trained journeyman electrician, complicated trade, and a non-union-trained journeyman electrician? If you say there is no difference, can you tell me what the difference is?
Okay, a non-union shop can dictate anything they want to their employees, meaning the way they dress, meaning the way they groom, meaning the way
The union dictates things to employees all the time. Unions will say, you don't have a job today. You know, why not? Well, because we gave it to one of your union brothers. He was higher up the list. Tell me that ain't true.
Well, there's been other issues with unions that I don't really want to get into. I don't want.
No, I know you don't want to get into them because they disapprove what you're saying, Gary.
Not necessarily.
Well, tell me this. Tell me this. Does the union tell you, I'm sorry, Gary, you won't be working here today. We've sent you to Seattle or to Tacoma or to some other place. They need help there. And if you want to work, you go there. We've given your job to another member who has seniority over you.
No, never had that happen to me in all my life.
It happens to other union members that I've talked to.
Well, they have a weak union, man.
It's some of the strongest unions around. But Gary, I started by asking you what we disagree with. What do you think is my misimpression of unions?
I did have to go to NLRB to file.
I didn't ask you that. I ask you, what is the misimpression you think I have of unions? I've always said, under the Constitution and federal laws, you have a right to join a union. If you want to be in a union, do I think it's foolish? Yes, I do. But tell me what you think. What is my misimpression?
And they're not. They're part of the dues that you pay for somebody who negotiates for you.
No, hold on. Gary, I'll give you a good example. There are 53,000 unionized teachers in the state of Oregon. They collect $53 million in union dues. They spend about $10 million of that on negotiating and grievances and everything else, and they spend the rest on politics. Why is it that 80 to 90% of union dues go to politics that have nothing to do with negotiating.
I have no idea.
I do, because the Democrats love the unions, and they love the money they get from them, and those unions strip that money out of union members' pockets and give it to Democrats who most of those union members don't even like. Thank you, Gary.
The Lars.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. It serves Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. And one of our good friends is Todd Myers, Environmental Director at Washington Policy Center. Hey, Todd, I know we had planned to talk about honeybees. Can we talk about that in a moment? But there's something else I want to throw at you, and I don't usually do a change-up on you, so you'll forgive me for doing it today?
Absolutely. I'm ready.
Okay, over the weekend, there was a story broke in Politico Pro, solid source. Scientific American has written about it as well. So that's sort of the mid-grade between science, which is unreadable by lay people like me, and popular science, which is basically just a big place that's full of ads for power tools. But right in the middle is Scientific American. So a University of Washington researcher has decided to do experiments on weather modification, and apparently, you know, with climate in mind, because I think that's where the grants are coming from the federal government for that. And they've put a cannon, kid you not, on a defunct aircraft carrier that's parked in San Francisco Bay. And they said they're firing salt crystals into the air. Except, unlike most scientists, they did not make a big public announcement about it. Now, it's out where people can see it, so people start asking questions about it, saying, why are you firing these microscopic salt crystals into the air? And they said, well, we're going to make more clouds, and we're going to make the clouds more reflective of sunlight to protect planet Earth from global warming. And I wanted to ask you about that, because even some of the science types have been saying, you know, doing this in largely in secret, not quite all the way off the books, but not certainly, you know, announcing it to the public what you're doing and saying that you're going to change the climate change weather. If you change it one place, you're likely to have effects in other places. I mean, if all of a sudden Seattle started doing cloud seeding and got all the rain to drop on the west side of the Cascades, Ellensburg and Spokane might not be too happy with that. Yakima either.
Yeah, and so the idea, this has been floated a number of times, and so what they're called, in this case it sounds like cloud seeding, in other cases what they put up over are called aerosols that block the sun. So when Mount Pinatubo erupted, you actually saw a big reduction in global temperatures because of all the material it put up into the air. This is slightly different than that. But yeah, so there is a theory. The question is, how much uncertainty? What are the unintended consequences as you raise? And one of the things that I like to tell people is that the climate is not a thermostat. We don't know enough to, you know, turn the knob up or turn the knob down. And sort of ironically, the people who are most upset about this are actually the people, the climate extremists on the left, because they don't want solutions that reduce global temperatures that don't involve societal transformation. So the irony is that they actually have opposed these sorts of things because they say, well, if we can do it this way, or we can do carbon sequestration, pulling CO2 out of the air and storing it, then we don't have to do societal transformation. So I think it's very funny. There's nervousness on all sides, and I think that there should be. I think these sorts of things are interesting, but obviously they're not, I don't think they're ready for prime time. And as you note, they should be transparent, and we should be really certain about what we're doing before we start playing games, thinking that we're smarter than the climate.
Well, and let me ask you about this. Maybe the numbers are just so big that it really doesn't matter. But I've had at least a few people, and I had the idea go through my head as well, and they said, Lars, when you start pumping all this microscopic salt into the air, and then the rain falls, it's going to carry the salt back down. Now, I do recall from my history that the Romans used to wreck people's farm fields by salting them. Is this really a terrific idea, or are the quantities just not enough to make a difference?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. But again, these are the sorts of questions that you need to ask, because there have been more than one occasion where people get myopic about one thing and don't think about the unintended consequences down the road. But I know that several people are looking at this. But yeah, I think in the global scheme of things, this is probably not one that's going to make a difference at the end.
Yeah, I just wonder, because it seems so bizarre, and the fact that they've chosen a place like San Francisco. Maybe they thought they'd be embraced in San Francisco. Oh, and we're glad you've arrived with your salt cannon, because you're going to fix the planet, because that place is notoriously cloudy. So it kind of seems silly to go to a place that, you know, what did Mark Twain say? The coldest coldest winter he'd ever spent was the summer he spent in San Francisco. And they're going to go down and say, hey, folks, we're going to make more clouds and more rain in San Francisco. I can't imagine anybody getting on board that.
And anyway, a salt cannon sounds like something I'd use in my cooking.
Well, actually, I have an assault rifle that I use. It uses plain old kitchen salt, and it's for knocking out bugs, you know, like flies and things like that. When you're sitting outside and the fly keeps flying around your barbecue and you shoot him with the assault gun, then he's gone. And it's clean. And
probably
it's
better use.
It's biodegradable. Hey, let me ask you about honeybees, because you're a beekeeper, and people have been saying for a long time that honeybee populations are declining. What's actually happening?
Yeah, not just declining, but collapsing. And in fact, we keep hearing this time and again that honeybee populations are collapsing. You see signs that say no bees, no food, all of these sorts of things. And of course, invariably, the environmentalists blame it on pesticides. Pesticides are killing all the honeybees. Well, we have been saying for years that honeybee populations are not collapsing, and actually they are climbing. And a new comprehensive census done by the U.S. federal government finds that not only are honeybee populations not declining, they actually increased over the last decade faster than any other livestock. they're considered livestock, and they increased by about a third. And we've been saying this for a while, and the reason is that beekeepers have a strong financial incentive to make sure that their bees are healthy so that they can get paid for pollination services for selling honey. And so we have seen a mite called the varroa mite, which attaches to bees and weakens the bees and does cause increased mortality. We are seeing a larger percentage of hives die. But beekeepers are replacing those hives faster than they are dying because of those free market forces. And so all of the politicians, all the environmental activists who want to put all more regulations are forgetting that the market is more powerful than those regulations. And that's why we've actually see honeybee populations increasing.
Well, and didn't you tell me, that, if I recall right, that this is the amateurs. These are the, like you, you know, they're not the professional beekeepers. They're saying my bees are going down, and they're the small fry. And they're trying to say that whatever's happening to the hobbyist honey beekeeper is happening to the whole industry. And that's not the case. Am I right about that?
That's exactly right. And so when you look at the studies, it is the small time, you know, the hobbyists who don't have those strong financial incentives. I want my bees to live, but if they don't, you know, I'm not losing my livelihood. Commercial beekeepers, that's not the case. And the other thing that's interesting about that is that commercial beekeepers have the lowest rates of mortality of any beekeepers, despite the fact that their bees are most exposed to agricultural pesticides, which
because that they know what they're doing. Todd, I've got to go, but that's Todd Myers from the Washington Policy Center. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
What a
vegan actually is?
They say cows are bad for the environment because all they do is eat plants and fart, just like vegans.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
I think it's important to recognize where people are at, too. The country's been through a lot. Families have been through a lot. And just because a number on a page looks good doesn't mean people can feel it. Anybody who's been in a relationship knows that if somebody's not feeling great, the first thing you say to them is not, you should be feeling
you feel
better
great.
Than you are, right? Stop not feeling it. So, look, we've been through a lot as a country.
Now, that is Pete Buttigieg. He ought to be at his job, which is transportation secretary for Joe Biden. But clearly, he's not been on the job much in the last 3 years because America's transportation system, by almost any measure, is in terrible straits. We had a ship crash into a bridge in Baltimore, brought the bridge down, maybe billions of dollars to replace it. We really don't know at this point. We had another ship that either this morning or over the weekend lost power near the Verrazano Narrows Bridge in New York's harbor, and that could have been a problem. We've got airplanes, and there were more of them just in the last couple of days, with parts falling off as they either took off, landed, or flew through the air. We've had a supply chain crisis that doesn't seem to be willing to quit. And yet there's Pete Buttigieg, transpose secretary, on the D.C. talk shows this weekend. He said, we need to talk about reality here. There's a lot of funding and a lot of energy going to telling a different story in the news outlets and online. But he says, the simple facts are that I can safely walk my dog. I want you to hear this soundbite because this guy is such a dunce that he believes that, number one, we do not have a major rising crime problem in America. And number two, the best measure of that is whether or not a cabinet secretary with his own personal security detail is safe in a crime sewer like Washington, D.C. Listen to Pete Buttigieg from this weekend.
So we need to talk about the reality here. And again, there is a lot of funding and a lot of energy going into telling a different story, especially on ideological news outlets and online. But the simple facts and the simple reality are right here staring us in the face, including the fact that I can safely walk my dog to the Capitol today in a way that you couldn't do when we all got here.
Yeah, this is the same Pete Buttigieg who will actually get in an SUV and have the SUV carry him to within about 800 yards of where he's going, at which point he jumps out of the SUV, gets on his bicycle, and bicycles the rest of the way. So it can look like he's doing things that are smart for the environment, but he's doing it with a little bit of assistance from a big black SUV. Well, let's talk about the reality. Last year, Washington, D.C., by the numbers, had its deadliest year in 20-plus years for murder. It saw the largest violent crime spike in any major U.S. city. And yet Pete Buttigieg says, but I can safely walk around. Well, you're a member of a presidential cabinet. You have a security detail. And yet, what does Pete Buttigieg tell you? He says there is a well-funded noise machine that's trying to poke holes in these achievements. In other words, it's all just media hype. And the fact that D.C. has counted more murders last year than any year in 20-plus years and had the biggest spike in violent crime of any major American city, forget that. That's just the media. And the reality is also gasoline prices are up 51%. Overall prices up 18.6%, and I don't even think that fully encapsulates what's going on. The New York Post did something interesting. In 2020, they went out and they bought a typical basket of groceries like you might imagine an American family buying. A gallon of milk, a couple loaves of bread, a couple of pounds of hamburger, all the things you'd regularly buy. They bought $100 worth of groceries in 2020. Now, fast forward to this year. They went out, bought the same basket full of groceries at the same store. It went from $100 to $137. So even though the inflation numbers say that prices overall, depending on who you're reading, are either 18, 19, 20, even as much as 22%, the New York Post documented a 37% increase in a typical basket of groceries for an average family and real average weekly earnings across America. Now, that's a great way to measure it. You say, well, prices are up, but my paycheck is up as well. Well, guess what? Under Joe Biden, real average weekly earnings are down 4.2%. What does that mean? It means when inflation goes up 20, but your paycheck only goes up 16%, you don't have as much spending power. And add to that, what they said was a great jobs report last month. Well, that great jobs report actually produced what? It produced 303,000 jobs, of which zero were in manufacturing, of which about 200,000 were part-time jobs. In other words, you got a great economy as long as you don't mind working two or three jobs. But listen to what Pete Buttigieg says.
Having said that, we're also achieving a lot as a country. And while there is a very well-funded noise machine trying to poke holes in those achievements, trying to talk down the economy and all the things America has done, I think it reflects well on the president that the American people under his leadership and the American economy under his leadership have added so many jobs, including, importantly, in areas like manufacturing.
Areas like manufacturing, where in the month of March, there were zero additional new jobs. Let's go to Willow, who's a naysayer. Hey, Willow, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening to your program, Lars, and you're talking about honeybees. I have lived here in Ashland for 2 decades, and I have 2 cherry trees that are just currently in full blossom. And always before, they have been at this point covered in honeybees, and now there's not one honeybee on them. I don't know if I'm even going to get the pollination happening to where I actually get cherries this year.
And why? See, what you have to ask is, why don't you have the honeybees? As our friend Todd Myers pointed out, even the Washington Post is saying there's been a 31% increase in honeybees since 2007. But the vast majority of those bees are not kept by, you know, hobbyists. They're kept by people who do it as a business. And they've seen a 31% increase in the last 15 years or so. So if the number, it may be that somebody who had commercial honeybees used to have them near your home and they're not anymore. It may be that a hobbyist decided to give up the hobby. Do you have any idea where those bees were coming from?
I think they were wild honeybees. I think the people who are growing hives right now and have private honeybee hives are having honeybees around them. But I think the wild honeybee population has been decimated.
Based on one example from a couple of trees in your yard?
Yes, based on what my personal experience is with honeybees pollinating my cherry trees.
And what do you think has caused that?
I think the wild honeybee population has been decimated with pesticides that people are spraying on the different trees.
Hmm. Should we ban all backyard gardeners from using? Because backyard gardeners are basically the worst when it comes to using fertilizers and pesticides, because the commercial farmers want to use as little as they possibly can because it costs a lot of money. But the backyard happy homeowners like me, we tend to be statistically the worst when it comes to that. Should we just ban people from having pesticides and herbicides?
I am not sure what the solution should be, but my own personal experience tells me that the wild honeybee population has been decimated.
And you may be right. And by the way, decimated means reduced by one-tenth. You're listening to
the Lars Larson Show. At least someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Well, 1 week from now, we've got tax day, April 15, 2024. Whether you file early, file late, file on extension, it is tax day. And Grover Norquist joins me now, president of Americans for Tax Reform. Grover, how are you?
Oh, Lars, I'm doing very well. I'm just going to pretend tax day isn't coming.
I don't like it. I don't like the I don't like the chore of taxes, and basically all I have to do is pull together a bunch of stuff for my little radio business and then submit it to a nice young lady named Jeannie, who actually puts it all together and makes sure that I stay out of prison. Although these days they're not sending people to prison for tax crimes anymore, are they? I mean, the Hunter Biden exception and all.
Well, I think they're not putting Hunter Biden in prison for this sort of thing. I think any regular person who wasn't related to a leading Democrat would be in prison for this. Yeah,
no doubt. How is tax day this year going to differ from, say, last year or next year?
Well, the taxes have been going up, obviously, under Biden. He started to raise taxes. But he did have a slight problem, which was two Democrats in the Senate weren't willing to give him the tax rates that he wanted, tax rate increases. But he has a plan to fix all that. He's laid it out. He's been very specific. He wants to take the business tax, the corporate income tax, from 21% up to 28%, higher than China's, higher than France, higher than the United Kingdom, and Americans can compete on low wages, not low taxes. That's step one. Then he's got a capital gain. Oh, and small businesses, it's worse for you. Sorry about this. Subchapter S corporations, partnerships, pass-throughs. That tax will go to 39.6%. 39.6%. Ouch. Add your state tax, California and New York and Minnesota and Vermont, and you get up to half or more than half of your income. But then the really interesting thing is capital gains tax goes to 44.6%. Capital gains. Sell your house, sell land, work all your life on your business, you sell it, and the federal government's going to take 44.6%. State, whatever your income tax is in California, add 14% to that, takes it up almost to 60. And that is the highest capital gains tax in 100 years. That is higher than Jimmy Carter's, that gave us the very slow growth, both inflation, stagflation, at the same time that it gave us inflation and stagflation. So higher than Jimmy Carter for capital gains taxes. Oh, and by the way, China's 20% on capital gains. We're going to be at 44.6. Can you imagine how we're going to do competing with the world? It's not just China. The average in the world is 18.8, so under 20%. Biden wants ours to be twice as high. You don't like the death tax? Biden's got a new one. Oh, not instead of. It's in addition to. In addition to the present death tax, he wants to tax the inflationary gains, okay, of when you of stocks or land or anything that you inherit. He wants to have us get rid of the step-up in basis. So that, and remember, the capital gains tax is largely a tax on inflation. And while that was very true in the 70s, it was less true thanks to Reagan's growth and less spending than the Democrats wanted. But now, in the last 3 years, we've seen 18% inflation. Whatever you sell, you know, baseball cards, land, your house, the capital gains tax, it's included on the inflation that comes up. And there's the tax on energy that he wants, carbon tax on all the energies that work. He wants a tax on people that invest in, use energy for Bitcoin, possibly in the future gun manufacturing. That one he hasn't quite decided on. It's quite a list of taxes. If a company invests in itself, say you're Amazon, you have an extra $1 billion, what do? Amazon says, well, I want to put that billion into Amazon and buy Amazon stock because I think Amazon is the best buy you can have, the best way to invest. They put a 1% tax on that. Why would you penalize a company for saying they want to invest in their own company? I want to own stock in a company that thinks the best investment they can think of is their company. He wants to take the 1% to 4%, which just reminds us that when Biden or any advocate of higher taxes says, we have a little tax, 1%, it won't stay at 1% for very long. We're going to have you, I'd like to swallow this tapeworm, just a teeny one, Tapeworms grow.
But they grow.
Taxes grow.
Well, and Grover, I guess capital gains has always, I mean, I don't have a lot of things that that applies to personally. So, but I've ended up talking, and what really seems crazy is just from a fairness standpoint. You go out, mom and pop business gets started, you grow it, you work your heart, you work your tail end off, and you finally grow it to some size. If you had completely failed, the government doesn't even know your name. You know, they say, oh, sorry, you failed. That's terrible for you. If you succeed, the government says, we get almost half of all your success. And you just think about explaining that to people. So you're some family that went out and bought some, you know, terrible little convenience store that wasn't doing very well. And they thought, we can do something with this. And the whole family pours in the effort and everybody shows up to help out and you grow it into something. And it becomes something that the government shows up and says, we are your nearly 50% partner in your success. But if you had failed, we have no idea who you are. We don't even know your name.
Well, and for the last 20, 30, 40 years, you've been paying property taxes and income taxes and sales taxes and Social Security taxes on all your workers. Then they take half of what you've got. Okay? This isn't like the only tax that hits you if you're a small businessman or a woman or entrepreneur. This is on top of everything else you pay taxes on, excise taxes, the whole kit and caboodle.
Is Biden going to get this ask from Congress for his 2025 budget, the one that starts October?
This year, no. We have a Republican majority in the House. They can't agree on very much, but one of the things they can agree on is they're never voting for a tax increase. They have been very, very good. Almost all of them have signed the pledge, certainly all the leadership, Johnson, Scalise, all these guys, Jordan, they've all signed the pledge. They're very serious about it. They're going to keep it. They're not going to let a tax increase happen. And 41 votes in the Senate can stop a tax increase. And we have more than that with Republicans who signed the pledge in the Senate. The danger comes if Biden gets reelected and he holds the Senate. And you don't have to hold it by much. How about 50-50 with a vice president? That gives you control. And all you got to do is pick up 4-5 House seats. You now have full control of the House and the Senate. And in budget reconciliation, there's no filibuster. So you can raise any tax you want with 50 votes in the Senate, 219 in the House, and a presidential signature. So don't laugh too hard at this list of ridiculous, outrageous tax increases that, you know, Biden's talking about. People thought he was kidding when he talked about shutting down fossil fuels. I remember he campaigned saying he wasn't going to.
Now
he says he will.
And that appears to be the way he's going. That's Grover Norquist, the president of Americans for Tax Reform, with a little picture of what Tax Day next week is going to look like. Back in a moment. Glad to get your calls. 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com.
Message from Lars.
I'd like to apologize to anyone I've not offended yet. Please be patient. I'll get to you shortly.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network, which has for about 25 years been serving the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, with honestly provocative talk. Your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers, as you can tell, naysayers always go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And one thing I've only mentioned in passing today, somebody over the weekend won the $1.3 billion Powerball, and they won in Oregon. And apparently that has never happened before. $1.3 billion. Now, the government only lets you keep about half of that. But they drew the final numbers, and it was delayed for some reason, technical reasons of one kind or another. But the winner was drawn in the state of Oregon. It was bought in the city of Portland on Saturday. Until the latest drawing, nobody had won the top prize in Powerball since New Year's Day. That's 41 consecutive drawings without a jackpot winner. The $1.326 billion prize ranks, get this, as the eighth largest in U.S. lottery history. There have been seven others that were bigger. So just take that into account. And obviously, I didn't win. But I'd love to talk to the winner. But I thought about it. If I went on the air and I said, look, I'd love to talk to the winner of Powerball, I'd probably get a whole bunch of joke callers. But if somebody called the show and said, yeah, I'm the one who won, how would they be able to prove it? I don't know of any way. Our poll on X today, should America leave abortion decisions to the states or have one nationwide rule? Donald Trump came out and announced today that, like the Dobbs decision, he wants the decision on what the rules for abortion are to be decided by each of the states. So Oregon and Washington, you can kill a baby right up to a nanosecond before the baby is born. In Idaho, most abortions are illegal. I think it's good that America has 50 laboratories of democracy, as Ben Franklin would have described them. There were only 13 back then, but he said it's good for states to be able to make individual decisions. On that note, let's go to George. Hey, George, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi there, Lars. Whatever Joe Biden's position on life was earlier was the correct position, and now he has the incorrect position.
Agreed. And by the way, do you think most people know that Joe Biden has been a longtime pro-lifer and only now is doing this, and I think only because of politics?
Well, he's been saying that abortion is okay, even though he's quote-unquote pro-life in the past. So I don't think we can give him any bonus credit. So I think that makes him a lot like Judas Iscariot, that was pro-Christ and then became a traitor in the end. So far as Donald Trump's position, by the way, give Judas credit, he did repent. Yeah, and so far as Donald Trump's position, I don't think it's okay to say it's okay to kill innocent lives in some states but not in others. I think that's the wrong policy, and I think we need a national ban on abortion. I think that's the correct position. Joe Biden is right in saying that we need a position. It's just that he took the wrong position.
Yeah, except for this, George. Do you think even if we had a solid conservative majority in the House and a solid conservative majority in the Senate, and we had Donald Trump in the White House, do you think there's any way we'd get a federal statute that would say no abortions except in the case of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother? Do you think a statute like that would ever be passed by an American Congress?
Well, remember, for all my life, I heard Roe versus Wade will never be overturned. So you have to have the positive attitude of going after what you want, especially if it's the right thing.
But you only had to deal with 9 votes in that case, and now you have to deal with 535. And in the case of the Supreme Court making that decision, both the one in 73 and the Dobbs decision more recently, those are all people who can't be removed by the voters. I think most of the conservatives who would vote for a nationwide ban, especially the ones in those states where they're right on the edge, say one of the battleground states, like 6 or 7 of them, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, etc., those people would say, if I vote for a nationwide ban and I vote to take away states' rights and say this is a federal decision, not a state decision, number one, how does that square up with the Constitution? And number two, what happens when all of those people in the battleground states lose their House seats, which, you know, remember, they got to get reelected every 2 years. And 2 years from now, a Democrat Congress reverses the whole thing in statute and simply says, no, abortion's allowed anytime, anywhere, for any reason. Because as long as it's in statute and is not in the Constitution or a Supreme Court decision, anything this Congress can do, the next Congress can undo, right?
Yes, but it would be difficult to undo it, just like it's been difficult to undo it so far.
George, come on. George, if we had Democrats in control of the House and the Senate right now and Joe in the White House, You don't think they would put up an abortion, a nationwide abortion law that would be anytime, anywhere, under any circumstances, and they'd pass it right now?
That's why I want the other side to do the same thing.
Well, then all you do is you bounce it back and forth, and it never really gets resolved. Plus, if you had a nationwide ban, how quickly do you suppose they would tie the thing up in the courts?
I suppose they would try, but right now the courts are in our favor.
The Supreme Court is in the conservative favor. How about the rest of the federal courts, where Joe Biden has just appointed a whole bunch of federal judges who have jobs that they don't have to run for re-election, jobs for life, and the lower federal courts, they would do it, they would undo it in a heartbeat. George, thanks very much. I appreciate the call. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest.
Now, the Lars